there. You're listening to Married to the Ministry, which is part of the Love Worth Finding podcast network. If you are a pastor's wife looking for encouragement or for practical wisdom on how to manage all the challenges of your role with a smile on your face, we're so glad you're here. This is your host, Janet Addison, and I'd like to help you embrace truth and delight in your ministry life. I've just made some yummy hot tea, so why don't you grab a cup and let's chat for a while.
Well, hi, and welcome back to Married to the Ministry. I'm so glad you're joining us today. Today, Mallory Allen is going to be talking with me about how to raise kids in a ministry family. Mallory and her husband, Josh, are church planters in the Memphis, Tennessee area, and they're raising two boys in ministry. So she's going to have some good tips for us and a good perspective for us today. So welcome, Mallory.
Thank you for having me.
Another tidbit about Mallory is she is the host of the Faithful 31 Moms podcast that is also put out by Love Worth Finding. So that might be another resource for those of you who have kiddos still at home. A lot of good information in that podcast, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Well, tell me a little bit about your ministry journey. Catch us up a little bit.
Yeah. So my husband and I met in Jackson, Tennessee, and we married there. We were both interns together, starting out in ministry for youth. And he started out in middle school ministry in 2010. And we went up to high school ministry at that same church, Inglewood Baptist Church in Jackson, Tennessee. And then about 5 years after that journey, we got called to a church outside of Atlanta in Flowery Branch, Georgia, called Christ Place Church. And then we did college ministry there, and we planted multiple sites of college ministry there. And we also did young families. And so that was a fun adventure as we were also growing our family. And then about 5 years after that, we moved in the middle of the pandemic in 2020 to Memphis to plant a church in East Memphis, where there's a lot of dying churches over in that area. And we have been meeting in the YMCA over there for about 3 years now. So that's kind of our journey, I guess.
Well, what do you consider to be one blessing of being married to the ministry?
I think that I would have answered it differently back when I first started and now. But I think one of the biggest blessings has just being on another level of partnership with my husband, because, you know, there's a lot of people that in marriage, you know, a lot of times you have things that you do together, like hobbies and or shows that you watch together, or you go watch your kids play sports, whatever it is that kind of keep you bonded as a family. But with us, you know, especially in church planning, it was kind of like all boots on the ground. Everybody is completely all in, like in our prayers as a family, in our efforts. We tear down and set up every single week. So just like there's a lot of extra time, I guess, that we have spent together. And at first, I would have not considered that a blessing. We had to really learn how to work together. But I think over time, it has helped grow us closer as a couple. And that's a huge blessing. But it definitely came with some stress and burdens in the beginning of it. But I think the Lord has been good and has made that a blessing in our life together. So it's been a cool journey.
Well, that is a really good point, the togetherness factor. You know, because Greg did have a different job during our marriage, and you know, he went to work and did his thing and didn't really, you know, that wasn't something I could really be a part of. So ministry is definitely, it is a blessing that we can do that with our husbands. Well, you mentioned a burden. I was just shocked to hear that you have had some burdens and stresses. So what's a burden that you've experienced in your ministry marriage?
Well, That's funny that you mention it because I guess, especially when kids come into the picture, it kind of complicates that little duo team that you have going, if you will, before kids are in the picture. And so when I was thinking about coming on with you, I actually thought about four things that I don't feel like I'm completely delivered from as I'm sharing these things today. So like, don't anybody think I've arrived and I'm an expert. I'm 35 years old and still very much learning, but I have been in it since I was 21 and had a couple of kids along the way. And so I kind of laughed to myself as I was thinking through some of the things that you had asked me, Janet, just to, as I was coming on, because I came up with four lies that we often tell ourselves, or the enemy tries to make us tell ourselves as pastor's wives, and also as being moms, as pastor's wives specifically. And so the first one I think would be best shared with a story mostly, but overall I was thinking about it as, you know, when you're a newlywed or when you're a new mom, there's a lot of things that you're struggling with to adjust to just in normal life, not even being a pastor's wife, just being a new wife, being a new mom, all those things. You know, your daughter's a new mom now. So it's just a lot of adjustments. And I remember I had one toddler and I was pregnant with another one. And Josh and I were starting a young couples class, a young marrieds class. So there were some that had kids, some that were having kids, that kind of age range. And this was in Georgia. And I just remember we had a group of five couples that were all like 40 plus age couples that were supposed to be our teachers and mentors in the class. That was kind of how it was set up. It was kind of a unique situation and they would rotate and teach us. And I just remember everybody kind of started pairing up with these couples, like they would take a couple under their wing to kind of like mentor and pour into. And I just remember asking one of the ladies, the teachers, one day, well, who's going to take me and Josh, you know? And I just remember she said as quick as she could, well, nobody can take you. I mean, y'all are the pastor and the pastor's wife. And I was just like, what? Because I just thought to myself, just because I'm a pastor's wife, I'm 28 years old at the time. I was like, I haven't arrived, like spiritually, I haven't even arrived as in any areas of life. Like I need help. Like, I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And I really think that she meant it as, I don't want to be disrespectful or rude by saying that you need me since you're a pastor's wife, which I appreciate the respect, but on the other end of the spectrum, what I found to be true a lot more than not, and people listening may think the same, is that they don't think that we need the help or the mentorship as pastor's wives because we're married to a pastor, so they should be doing that for us. And I just remember thinking, that is so far from the truth. Like, that is not true. And so, I just thought that's just one way that the enemy tries to tell us, like, you're alone, you know, you're alone in this motherhood role, in this wife role, in this pastor's wife role. And I had to kind of come to grips with that and realize that I didn't need to be alone in that. And if I couldn't get it from lay people in the church, understandably, I understood their like perspective, then I needed to get it somewhere else. And so, you know, I've been in churches where I've had the lead pastor's wife really take on that role and shepherd and pour into the younger pastor's wives. And I've been in situations where the lead pastor's wife did not do that. And I had to find that in other places, in other ministry friends, if you will. But if you're listening and you're drowning, or you feel like, you know, you need help with this new role of motherhood, or you need help with your marriage or whatever, and you don't feel like you have a lay person in the church that's willing to take you on, if you will, you need to find it from somebody. Like, I recommend having ministry friends, that can understand your perspective. In our case now, we have some church planning friends that we can talk to about things. But it's hard being the one that's always pouring out and there's not people pouring in. So that was kind of the first lie that I was going to cover that we tell ourselves, is that we're alone in whatever role we're in ministry. And it doesn't have to be true. The second thing that I was thinking about, I shared this with you, Janet, you probably have some funny stories too, but is that people assume in the church that Sunday mornings are just bliss. And I said, because we never miss, and I didn't realize it would rhyme, and that's kind of funny, but like, it's not. It's like the furthest thing from that possible when kids come into the picture, because not only do you always have to go to church by yourself because your husband's long left the house earlier before you, but not only that, but it seemed to always be, and still to this day is, the day that my kids decide they don't want to wake up. They decide they don't want to dress up. I have boys, so, you know, dresses and all those things that girls like, that's not the case with boys. Or it's the day I said, like, I forgot to put gas in my car and I didn't plan to, like, get gas on the way. Plus I have the, you know, kids in the car. Or like, I mean, I thought of all kinds of stories started popping in my head where it's like your baby has a explosion diaper, or your toddler's throwing a fit and doesn't want to leave the house, or this seriously happened to me once, but I have boys, so they're roughhousing, and I went to church one year with them roughhousing, and that morning, and one of them went to church with a black eye, and it was Mother's Day. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So, you know, that really happened. Anyways, it just seems like it's always the day that, like, everyone thinks, since you're always there, that you have it together.
Well, and if you have little kids, it really messes their schedules up. You know, you work so hard to schedule your babies and schedule your kids. And you know, I know when our kids were little and Greg was first going to ministry, we had like 8 o'clock Sunday school, and then 9:30 Sunday school, 9:30 church, 11 o'clock church. You know, we were there for hours. And then we had to be back at 4 for choir or deacon's meeting or whatever. And then we had church, and we were there again for hours. And it was a rough day. You had to recover from Sundays when you were kids.
It's a lot for sure. And I thought it has gotten easier in different seasons of life as they've gotten a little older. But at the same time, they're more vocal now about how they feel about things too. And so that's kind of interesting and funny sometimes. But overall, I just think I in no way am excusing like absence or even being late. I know it happens sometimes, but like, I think that as pastors' wives, we should be present, but at the same time, like, cut yourself some slack. Like, if Sundays are hard, like, it's okay. You know, like, I can remember like getting in, like turning in on two wheels in my minivan being like, I made it, you know, and like, that was good enough. If the kids had wrinkled clothes on or whatever, so be it.
There were some Sundays that I took like 4-hour naps in the afternoons because I was just exhausted from all that is Sunday.
I think in those years of having littles, it's definitely harder. Now that mine are in elementary school, both of them, it's a little bit easier, you know. But so I will say, if you have babies and toddlers, like, you can take a breath that it's just a season. But if you're, you know, in a different season now, I can say it has gotten easier. But I just think that we put a lot of pressure on ourselves that we have to be like all smiles and like everything has to be perfect on that day. And like, there's no way that you can manufacture that every week. Like, you cannot control everything. And so I think that's something that the Lord has really like kind of released me of, I guess. But I mean, and on that same subject, the third lie I was thinking about was, and I've done this in different series of different times in our life and different ministries that we've been a part of. But, you know, I've
I've always struggled with telling myself that I'm not doing good enough and I'm not being a good enough partner in ministry, especially after having children. And I guess the best way to explain it is with like two stories. But the first is in youth ministry, when we first started out, we didn't have any kids. So I was at everything. I taught a Sunday school class. I was the D-Now leader. I was at every youth camp. I was even helping do the backdrops or whatever. I was in it, involved in everything. And after we had kids, I remember the youth being like, "You're old now," you know, like automatically, because I'm a mom, like I'm like, they just looked at me different. And mm-hmm. I couldn't be at everything anymore because I had a baby. Plus, he was uh-huh. very colicky, and that was difficult. And on another level, when we moved to Georgia, we did college ministry, like I mentioned, and we were planting multiple college services around the area, different nights of the week. And there were a lot of nights where I'd load up the kids. I remember like just going to the music only and coming home because they start late. So it was already past their bedtime just to do that. And we didn't have any family in town. So I would plan my mom or Josh's mom coming to town so that I could actually go to a service and stay the whole time, you know? And there were just many nights where I would come home and I'd put my kids to bed and it was already too late. So they were whiny. And on those college service nights, and I just sit on the couch after and beat myself up. Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm not doing enough with the ministry. Like the college girls, I'm not hanging out with them enough. I'm not staying for service enough. And I just remember just really beating myself up about that. And I guess if anybody listening hears nothing else, regardless of if you even have little kids or not listening to this, any pastor's wife, the three things that I really want to encourage you with that I feel like the Lord has told me over and over again is you're really only called to do three things. And that has lifted a weight off of me. And the three things that you're called to do, one, just like every other Christian walking this planet, is you're supposed to spend time with Jesus and have a personal relationship with him and grow that relationship. And if you're doing that, then secondly, you're married to a pastor, probably if you're listening to this podcast, and you're called to encourage him. You're called to love him. You're called to show him affection and like your home, a comfort to him, and also like a safe haven. You know, that's been something that I've struggled with. I thought the way that I was supposed to really care for him is that I was supposed to be at everything, or I was supposed to be doing
all the ministry at church.
Yeah. And that's one thing I've learned is that's not actually true. Mm-hmm. And that was freeing in itself. And then the third thing is, if you are a mom and you're raising kids at home, you are called to be there for those kids, and just meeting their everyday basic needs earns you the right to pour Jesus into them as they grow older, like we're supposed to be doing. And, you know, as I thought about that, those are three huge things. And if I'm doing those three things well, whatever time I have left, like teaching a Bible study at church or leading a youth group of girls or whatever, is fine and good. And if you have time for something, then do it. Go on a mission trip, whatever. But those are the three priorities. And for a long time, I had my priorities out of line because I thought I was supposed to be doing all this over here at the church and then all this over here at home. And you can't always do both.
Even now in my season of life, when I don't have any kids at home, I can't do all of it.
Yeah.
Because there are other things that come up, and there are other things that God wants us to do, and it doesn't all, I can't be investing in my community or in my neighbors or in the people in the world if I'm always at the church. So
right.
Sometimes we think we're a package deal. Sometimes churches think we're a package deal.
I thought of a fun story from Miss Joyce Rogers when I sat down with her a couple months ago. And she told me this story, and I thought it was so neat. And it just kind of tells a lot about both of them as who they were. But they went to a couple's house who was in ministry, but older than them at the time, another pastor and his wife. And this pastor's wife, Miss Joyce told me, was, you know, serving them on like the nicest dishes and with cloth napkins and like gourmet food that she cooked and all this stuff, because they went over to their house for dinner. And Miss Joyce said to Pastor Rogers, "There's no way that I could be this, like that I could do this." She said, "You know, I'm more of kind of like a paper plates kind of person." and I thought that was so funny, because his response to her was, "I don't need you to be her. I just need you to be you." And I thought, you know, there's truth in that. Like, our husbands married us. Like, if you're listening, like, he married you for a reason. He just wants you to be you. And he wants you to love Jesus, and he wants you to love him, and he wants you to love your kids. And whatever else flows out of you that you're passionate about, that's cool too. But I think a lot of times we put these pressures on ourselves that we have to be something that we're not. And that's just kind of something that I'm learning even in the last couple of years. And it's very freeing.
So what's your last, that was three, right? What's your fourth lie?
My fourth one is, and I will say really quick too, make sure that if you are seasoned, that you're telling the younger pastors' wives that, because it'd be really freeing for them to hear you say that if they're on your staff. But I wish somebody would have told me that when I was like in my 20s. My fourth thing is that our kids need to be the best behaved and the most involved in everything, and they need to know all the answers about the Bible. And obviously that is like impossible. That's what I would like call the glass house syndrome. Like, you know that like everybody's watching you, and then you know that they're watching your kids and they're listening to your kids. And you know, if they're misbehaving or they don't know the answers, you're thinking, you know, what, you know, oh no. And I know this because I was a kid in the ministry, and I felt like everybody was watching me, and I felt like I had to be at everything. And this is kind of what I've walked away with over the years, is I don't know why I forgot it as an adult, but as a kid, I saw straight through that. Like, kids can call out your mess so easily, and my kids can call out mine. And so, you know, if you really want your kids to love Jesus and you really want them to love his church, you have to do it by example. And you can't do it only at church. Like, that's not going to cut it. And so something that I realized, especially in church planning, when a lot of the like extra programming was stripped away, is all ministry, even for pastors' kids, it starts at home and it doesn't start at church. It really does. Like, there's a reason that Joshua 24:15 says, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Mm-hmm. It starts with the family. It starts at home. We just think, if I can just get them to Awanas or Cubbies or choir or Bible drills or, you know, VBS or anything else that I can get them to, then they're going to get enough of Jesus and it's going to be fine, you know. But I think that we forget sometimes, because we're exhausted, that really they're watching us. They're watching if what we're saying about the church when we don't think they're listening. They're watching if we're reading our Bible and we're really trying to live out what we're telling them to do at church. You can't fake it at home with your kids, you know. Yeah. Like, at church, you can tell everybody, "I'm fine, I'm good," and smile. And, you know, they think your life is perfect because you're a pastor's wife, but you can't fake that at home with your kids. And I think it's great, because I think that even though it's hard sometimes, like, I love how they call out, like, you to be honest, like, you really have to practice what you preach. So that's just something that I, you know, encourage you with, is that, you know, just have those real conversations with them, and it's okay. Like, I think ultimately, like, we all worry that the pastor's kids are going to go astray later. And I think what happens is they just think that if it's not as real at home as it is at church, then I don't want any part in it.
Have you ever felt like church people put expectations on your children?
Yes. Yes. I have had that happen before. I have had people, like, I feel like I'm trying to be like careful in how I say this, but I feel like they believe that because they're the pastor's kids, that they should always be on, that they should always act a certain way, that they should always know the answers, that they should never be the ones called out for disrupting in the Bible story time.
Right.
And that's, like I was saying earlier, kids are kids. That's just not possible.
It's totally unrealistic.
Yeah. And I've had a specific mom that I'm thinking of that teaches in our kids ministry, you know, pull me aside about one of my children. Right. And so I remember going out to the car and being like, for one, you're grounded because we're not going to be disrespectful to our teachers. But I would like to know what happened from your side of the story. And he told me, and essentially what happened was completely blown out of proportion, and it involved her child as well. And I think that's why she thought, you know, my child should be doing like perfectly what she told him to every time, but her child could do no wrong kind of thing. And I think that we all experience this, like, and I mean, your kids are going to do that stuff. Yeah. And yeah, it's just, it happens.
Greg had a deacon approach him one time because of he didn't like the way one of our children had handled something. It wasn't wrong or anything. It was just they didn't like whatever our kid had done. And Greg basically told him, you're not holding my child to a higher standard than you hold any other kid in the youth group. You know, my kids aren't perfect. Your kids aren't perfect. They're just teenagers. And don't hold my kid to a higher standard than you're holding these other kids. And we've also had some bullying in the church toward our children, which was totally unexpected. You hear about that a lot at schools, you know, and this was really before the whole bullying was a expellable offense, I think, like it is at school now. But we had multiple instances in several different churches where somebody just decided, I don't like this new pastor's kid and I'm going to make their life miserable. And they did. And people knew it was happening. Like, the youth people didn't necessarily step in and stop it. And that puts the pastor in an awkward spot when another church kid is bullying our kid, you know. So
it definitely happens. Yeah.
It definitely happens, and it's a little more sensitive. But again, Greg is always good about being an advocate for, you know, for our kids. And I know when we moved to one church, there was Sunday night Bible study. And so we all showed up, and my kids were the only kids in the room. And I really struggled with, okay, do I make my kids come because they're the pastor's kids, even though they're the only ones coming? And I decided no. So not only did I not make them come, I told Greg, I need to be at home with them on Sunday nights, building into my own children, not me again at church, leaving them alone. So there's going to be times like that that you have to make those kind of decisions. Protect your children. And remember, that goes back to the priorities you were talking about. While my kids are in my house growing up, they are my priority over church people sometimes.
Yeah.
And that absolutely changes. That priority changes as your stage and age of life changes too. Well, I know you've got some exciting new ministry projects that you're working on in addition to the Faithful 31 Moms podcast. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
With Faithful 31 Moms, it's been a great adventure. I've really loved doing the podcast and ministering to moms specifically through Love Worth Finding. But along the journey, I've written a couple of things, something called Casting of the Flowers, and then a devotional coloring book that goes with that, that basically takes kids through the ABCs, like the names of God. And then it takes some more in detail in the devotional. And then also a little booklet that churches and individual homes can use about how to lead your child to Christ if you feel like they're asking questions about that. Both of those are available at Love Refinding on the online store. We're also working on some new things this year for 2024 through Love Refinding. And in addition to some of the things that I've already done that I just mentioned, we're going to be writing some new devotional material for the family. So we've got some devotional books coming out, some church curriculum coming out that I'm going to be working on writing throughout the year. And hopefully the second part of this year, we'll be announcing some of that.
Well, I am so grateful that you gave up time to talk with me today. And I love the way you structured the beginning where you're talking about the lies that Christian women, that ministry moms and wives, the things that we believe that hinder us from being delighted where God has put us, the stage of life. And so I'm glad that you covered that. That was really some good information. I know that'll be encouraging to our listeners.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. And those of you who are listening, I just want to say bless you for all the hard work you're putting into your marriage, the hard work that you're putting into your children, and the ministry work that you're doing. I just am praying for you, and I'm really praying that God will bless you, especially as you're listening to this. And thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again soon.